G'day everyone, welcome to another Toon Under podcast, the Southern Hemisphere's biggest and best podcast, all things Newcastle United. Tonight, joined by Lee to talk about a comprehensive 5-1 victory over Sheffield United. Fortunately, sees them relegated, which is never good. We might get to that later on, but how you going, mate?
Pretty good, mate. It's always nice to have a win, isn't it, on the weekend? Doesn't ruin
it does
everything.
But
I tell you what, I was sweating at half time. I was thinking, Jesus, this is not a good performance.
Yeah, I was the same, and we'll sort of dive into that. Let's just get into it now. Let's stop
get amongst it,
fart arsing around. So the team, we had two changes from the midweek team against Crystal Palace. Emil Kraft and Harvey Barnes dropped to the bench, and we actually brought in two fullbacks, so Tino Livramento and Lewis Hall took up their probably most favoured fullback positions. Dan Burns slid back into left centre back, which he's been performing well in since he moved there. I don't know about you, Lee, but I was quite happy to see fullbacks playing as fullbacks.
No, absolutely. I said that in the chat as well when I saw the actual round pegs and round holes. I was like, oh, great, we've actually got fullbacks in the right position here.
Yeah.
I was actually really happy to see Gordon back on the left. I think the last game he was on the right, and it didn't, with Barnes on the other side, and it just, I don't know, it just didn't seem right. It didn't seem like it was working. So I was actually pretty happy to see him down the left. There is obviously a bit of a problem, though, with when it's set up like this with Hall and Gordon down the left. It was pretty obvious in the first half on the TV that there's not that understanding down the left-hand side between those two. And there was plenty of times where Gordon was just like waving his arms in the air because he was expecting to get the ball back, and it just wasn't happening. It was going inside or to the far end or whatever. And then other times, you know, there might have been an overlap and it wasn't utilised. It was just cut inside again. And I felt that was, it was sort of stopping our forward progress a little bit. It was stunting us a little bit, and it's to be expected. You know, Hall's played like 5 seconds worth of footy all year or whatever. But if that's going to continue, it needs to be worked on, I would say. But look, it was nice to see the fullbacks. It was nice to see Dan Byrne in the middle. I think I've gone full circle, and now I'm very much a Dan Byrne in the centrepiece. he had another terrific game. If it wasn't for him, God knows what the score was like at half time.
Mm.
And the rest of the team sort of picks itself, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, it does. I guess it's kind of strange, especially with Harvey Barnes too. Like he's performed really well when he's come on as a sub, but just hasn't hit the same when he's been a starter. So I think Eddie kind of went back to him having that impact sub, and with Wilson coming on as well. Like my mind straight away goes back to the first game of the season against Aston Villa when they both come on as substitutes and made a huge impact. So I was kind of happy to see him as a sub, not to see him drop, but knowing that we have that ability to bring on a really impactful player later on if we needed it, and it turns out it worked again. But game didn't start off too well. The visitors scored within 5 minutes, and we kind of carried our form or lack of form from the Palace game midweek into this one. And I know it was a very sloppy goal, and I don't know what had happened, and I don't think Eddie knew what happened either. He was pretty, pretty firm after the game with it wasn't acceptable that first half. And if you kind of read some of the player quotes and things like that, I think he kind of read in the riot act at halftime and sort of shook him into life, and we come out with a much better second half. But that first goal was the first warning sign. And if it wasn't for Dan Byrne, Lee, we could have been 3 or 4 down in the first half.
Yeah, and there's a lot of last-ditch tackles, wasn't it? Lots of little blocks and what have you from Dan Byrne. It was that first goal. There was like 4 Sheffield players in front of our keeper when that ball was coming across. I assume that we tried to play a line. Dan Byrne went down on his arse. They didn't even talk about that in the commentary. So I'm honestly not even sure what the hell happened there. But 4 people running on Dubravka, you know, you nut it in. It's 5 minutes in. It's such a shit goal. I'm sorry, but it's such a terrible goal to concede it's not like they had to work very hard. They just lobbed it to the far corner. It was even if Dubravka had somehow got his hands to it, like I say, there's three other blokes waiting to just tap it in. It was just wrong from top to bottom. But I will say, credit to Sheffield United. I mean, they were probably, they weren't technically, but they were more or less done as far as relegation's concerned. It's obviously being confirmed now on the back of this result, but they didn't come out like that. They came out with something, well, they came out with something to show, to something to prove, to maybe give the fans a little bit of hope for next season, perhaps, maybe even snatch a result. I mean, they came within a whisker against Man United, after all. And you have to say, you know, we've said that, I don't know how many times, but like, even the worst team in the league, all they've got to do is run at us fast. And we just shit ourselves every time. It's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
The amount of times in the chat, Craig and I were watching it and we're talking to each other and we're like, we just got to wake up here. This is like, we haven't even started. Everyone looked knackered. Everyone looked off the levels. Gordon didn't look like he had any kind of real pace in him. Bruno was kind of all over the place. Isak was coming left. He was going deep. He was trying to get on the end of things. It was just a bloody mess. And credit to Sheffield for making us flap, really.
Yeah, Well, the one time that the big dog did actually get on the end of one was a beautiful pass by Jacob Murphy. And once he was through, you can almost put your glasses down. There was no other option that was going in and the keeper wasn't touching it. So that was the seventh consecutive time he scored at home this season, which puts him third, believe it or not, in the all-time consecutive scoring at home. Andy Coles had eight. Which seems a lot, and then you look at the leader, and it's Alan Shearer, and he's got 15. So seven, he's not quite halfway to the record yet, which is frightening. So that was the one, that was kind of the one, I guess, bright spark for the whole half. We didn't really look like creating anything, and like you said, we were flat as a pancake for 45 minutes, and credit to Sheffield as well. Like, the way they played made us play like that, and I'm big on, you can point fingers at your own team, but you've actually got to tip your hat to the opposition sometimes for forcing you into playing as bad as you do. So,
absolutely,
yeah, half-time calm. And
by the way, mate, that ball from Murphy, like I say, it was absolutely incredible. Like, you don't know what you're going to get with Murphy half the time. Like, he's going to just kind of do crap, or he's going to do some amazing insightful passes. That one was perfect, right in the front of Isak. And it's done at that point, isn't it?
Didn't break stride. Yeah. He timed that run perfectly as well. So if he holds on for probably half a second quick, he's probably offside and the goal doesn't stand. But
he ran behind it.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. It was such a clever run. But even like you said there with Murphy, Lee, like, I think not just our away form, but our home form's been a bit inconsistent as well. Like, we haven't put many games of 90 minutes like we did last season as well. But when you factor in the players who are playing, like, I don't get bogged down in everyone who's missed games and things like that. But when you think of guys like Dubravka and Hall and Emil Kraft and Elliot Anderson, Murphy as well, Shah was obviously injured early on and tried to carry on and couldn't continue after halftime. Longstaff's been carrying an ankle for God knows how long, it feels like nearly the whole season. These inconsistent players are going to give you inconsistent performances. Like, that's what happens with these players. So it's kind of, when you think about it, it's actually remarkable that we're seventh.
Miracle.
And yeah, like, it's crazy that we've played so much of the season with these players who they're good enough at the level. Like, let's not demoralise them like that, but they're kind of not the players that are going to get us where we need to get to, and that's no fault of their own. Everyone's got their limitations, but the fact that we're seventh and we're clear in seventh is frightening with these players that we've had play a lot of the season.
It's absolutely remarkable, and you have to give credit to Eddie Howe. You have to give credit to all the backroom staff. There's been times this season when you just went, oh well, let's just finish the season because we've gone to dog shit and we're not going to get any better. And then by hook or crook, we've actually managed to turn around a bit more. And now we're starting to put, you know, results together. Obviously, Palace was a bit of a bump there. We've managed to get away with it against Sheffield. We are still pulling out results. There is still something to play for, which is just incredible. Four games to go.
Oh, there's so much to play for with four games to go. Yeah, absolutely.
When you think about the hardship that we've faced and the 14 players injured and all that kind of business. Like, you know, Amazon missed, or Prime, whoever it was, missed a trick. They should have done it about this season. Should have done the whole thing about the season with all the injuries and all the fighting against adversity and all that kind of stuff that Hollywood loves so much. Nobody would believe it. Nobody would actually sit there and go, this is impossible. This is bullshit.
God, they're really stretching the imagination now with this sort of stuff. So
exactly right,
with that, and you mentioned the 14 players as well, and it's easy to look and, oh, we've got so many players out. Like, that's the easy thing to look at. And there's another, I guess, a knock-on effect that I never thought of, and I don't know why I've never thought of this because it's really obvious, but Eddie mentioned it after the Crystal Palace game, is the training. So we had Ryan Scott on our United series, the goalkeeper for the Newcastle Jets here in the A-League. And if you haven't listened to that, go back and have a listen. Fantastic insights into the sports science and things like that. And I've got no doubt the sports science team in a Premier League club is far superior to what it is in our domestic competition here in Australia, and the data they have and everything like that. But the fact is, with so many blokes injured, Lee, you can't train properly because you don't have enough blokes actually on the paddock to train. So the guys that do train will train as good as they can, but they're actually limited with what they can do because of the availability of guys on the training pitch. And that'd be a huge, and everyone's like, oh, we can't wait to go back to a game a week and Eddie can prepare the team like he did last year and everything like that, which is true. But with the team where it is now and the squad where it is now, we don't actually have the players who can get out there and, like, for every drill you need to do, you need defenders in it. Like, we don't have enough, Bill, probably, at the training pitch. Like, the academy guys are probably training with the first team is just to make up numbers. Now, it might be good for their development, but in terms of us practicing what we need to practice, it's not ideal against really inferior opposition when you do it.
No, exactly. And, you know, you're not going to get the right performances. You're not going to have the right tactics. As you say, you're not going to have the right setup. You're going to have to just wing it. I imagine at some point you're just kind of winging it. And then you get all the shit coming out on socials and everything else, saying people, oh, why didn't we do this? And Eddie Howe's lost it. And yes, the results haven't been great, but look at the reasons why. You know, we're too easy to judge. And I've done it as well. Like, you know, we all do it. We all get the shit when it's going against us. But context is always important. And this season, above all other seasons, probably in the last few years, this one's been the one where we just have to sort of sit back and go, Jesus Christ, like, if I was doing Eddie Howe's job, I'd probably be swinging from a rope halfway through the season because of all the, because every time he was getting somewhere, someone else was going down injured. He would bring people on, they would get instantly injured and have to sub them off straight away. People come back from injuries and then get injured again.
Someone else gets injured and then you actually injury list hasn't reduced or anything. You've just got someone different on there.
And, you know, these are all the things that a professional manager's got to deal with, and all the backroom staff and everything else. And it's very easy for the fans to just see the results and, you know, get on their back. But as you say, the hardships that we've had to fight through this season are ridiculous. And it's full credit to everybody at Newcastle that we are still somehow fighting for potential European position in seventh. I mean, just amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Incredible.
It's better than being relegated, put it that way. It's better than fighting relegation. I'd rather this way round than the other.
Yeah, it's crazy though. Like, I no doubt you remember these times as well. Like, every morning or every night when you're watching the game, you'd always be flicking on like your phone to see what the scores for the other games were and stuff like that, and who's dropped points and stuff like that. And we all thought, oh, thank God we don't have to do that anymore. Like, we're not going to be down that end of the table. But it's just as bad now when it comes, like, last year was the Champions League and this year's Europe. Like, you're just as invested in the teams around your scores and what you are in your own game.
No, you'll always be like that. But obviously the relegation side of it is the whole perilous side of things, isn't it? It's a lot easier this way around where you're just hoping someone slips and you take their position in the last kind of European slot. It's much worse when you're thinking, shit, I hope that team loses or whatever, so that we can go into the relegation position.
Yeah, especially for us too. Like, do we have to buy another beIN subscription to watch the Championship now because it's not on Optus and things like that?
Cancelled that the moment we went out. I was like, bosh, cancelled.
See Optus. Hello, beIN. Welcome. so we'll get to the second half. Well, Eddie's giving him a fair old cook by the sound of it at halftime and shaking him back into life. So Bruno come out, no doubt. Maybe he was a bit overwhelmed. He did mention he was nearly crying before the game with the war flags display, and him and Joe really were grateful and thankful, but kind of went a little bit too far. I think they got a bit emotional about it and things like that. Maybe that affected his first half. But he'd come out after half time and maybe had a Kinder surprise in the break and made himself feel better. But it was a great ball in by Gordon to the far post, and he's openly admitted, Bruno, that heading's not a strength of his, but it was a great finish and put us 2-1 up and kind of got the monkey off the back a bit, didn't it?
Oh, I did. And yeah, we needed that as well. We just needed to get our noses in front. I actually thought Sheffield were starting to run out of either ideas or energy, or perhaps both, even in the first half, around about the 35th minute-ish. You could sort of see that their whole forward attacking intention had sort of cooled down a bit, and they were getting a little bit more withdrawn. And I didn't see the second half live. I was like, I'm not watching this. I'm not going to watch this get beat at 1 o'clock in the morning. I've got to get up at six. I'm not doing this. But I watched it back afterwards. And you can see that Sheffield kind of maintained that sort of mindset in the second half, which allowed us to do what we want to do without worrying about them flinging past us all the time at every single opportunity. Not lovely header from Bruno. It was a bit of a, do you think that was a bit of a muted celebration? Because he kind of like just jogs a bit to the corner flag, stands there. He doesn't, he just holds up a flag. And
yeah, I didn't mind it. It was a bit of 10-hour spiller about it. Yeah. Maybe, yeah, I don't know if it was the opposition, it was a big goal in the context of the game and kind of in context of the season as well, like keeps us in that seventh spot and things like that, and kind of made them have the feeling that, okay, we're behind now, we're actually going to have to come out and play a little bit more and be a bit more aggressive and try and score again. So it did mean a lot. So, yeah, you're probably right. Like the celebration didn't match the level of goal that it was and things of game. Yeah. So just after that, the big dog puts his 19th through a penalty. It was another great penalty and another untouched goal from a defender or keeper from Alexander Isak, which is absolutely remarkable, his finishing skills. I'm with Jack on this, Lee. I don't know about you, but Anthony Gordon was brought down in the area. For me, that should be an assist. Credited with an assist for Anthony Gordon, which would pull him right over the 10 assist mark. I think he's probably earned us 4 or 5 penalties this season alone.
Isn't that just because Jack's got some kind of bet on that he's going to get 10 assists?
Yeah, that was his prediction. But I don't have any dog in the fight. I just think that you should be actually credited with an assist if you earn the penalty yourself.
Yeah, I mean, why not? I guess it wouldn't be a penalty otherwise. But, you know, it was nice to see Gordon picking up his pace a little bit. He kind of woke up a little bit in the second half, and because he's down the left, he's suddenly finding that space, so he was able to run in and cut inside that he likes to do. You know, he's talked about in that interview with Gary Neville, he likes doing that sort of thing. He likes mixing it up as well, so people don't know if he's going to do that or not. That penalty, though, I don't know. It was a funny one, because when you watched it, it didn't to me look like an actual I've brought you down on purpose, like the intent didn't seem to be. It looked a bit like a just coming together of feet, of legs.
Yeah.
A bit like the one that they didn't get later on in the
second
half.
Which I think was the right decision as well.
It was a lovely bit of defending. But so I don't know. And there was obviously like the initial contact was outside the box, and then it continues inside the box, all that business.
Yeah.
But it just looked like they're coming together.
We're all well too aware of that rule now.
Exactly. But do you know what I mean? Or did it not just look like it was just a...
No, I thought it was like a foul. I thought it was a foul, and I thought on for their one that got overturned, I thought it was a foul as well. And then once I seen the in live real time, I thought, oh shit, that's a pen. And then when I watched it again, I'm like, oh no way, like that can't be a penalty. But you never think it's gonna get overturned. They always go, it's not given, and then it ends up getting given. There's not many that go back the other way.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I suppose one was like a good bit of defending action from young Alex Murphy, and the other one was more like just a clumsiness.
Yeah, that's a good word, actually, clumsiness.
It seemed just a little bit on the harsh side, but I'm often kind of a bit on the fence with these type of incidental contacts. You see them not giving it. It was a difficult one, but Isak just waits for the keeper to move a little bit too far to his right hand side. I don't know what the hell he was thinking.
It was like a little Mexican standoff, wasn't it? They were just looking at each other going, "Oh, you're gonna move, you're gonna move," and he went, "Oh, you blinked," and then he just put it right, and the keeper just it was weird. He kind of dove after the ball had gone in to make it look like he'd actually made an effort. But yeah. So there, 3-1, we're cruising now, and for me the next one was the goal of the day, Lee, the own goal from Ben Osborne. What a cracking finish. The back heel, the no look back heel in the Euro net, and like the big like after it was absolutely magic as well.
You just know that you're not getting anywhere when you have shit like that happening. But
yeah,
I mean, to be honest, he was obviously crowded. Gordon was, I think, in front of him trying to, was it Gordon or Bruno? Somebody was in front of him trying to get a touch on the ball. I think, as I said to you just before we came on here, I think he probably got his sense of position slightly wrong.
I think he thought he was further out. He thought he was more outside the post than what he actually was.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, otherwise that would have been a nice bit of defending.
Just back heel out for a corner. We'll go again. He's gone.
He's probably 2 meters, too close to the goal.
I'll take. How have I ended up a meter and a half more right than where I thought I was? Where have I taken these three steps? Yeah,
Keeper had no chance whatsoever.
Beautiful,
beautiful finish. Yeah, very happy for that one. But I mean, you feel bad for the poor players. So bad.
You do, especially with them in their position and things like that. And when it's not your day, your week, your month, your year.
It's like, oh, well, that's I've just relegated us then.
Yeah, it's no worse feeling. Yes. There's 100 mil down the gurgler. Then after that, we've seen the introduction of Callum Wilson again and Harvey Barnes. And I know a lot of people have got their doubts about Callum Wilson's fitness, but I thought at this stage, returning from injury, I was a little bit more confident than what I have been in the past because his injury wasn't a lower body injury. It was a pec, so he should have had plenty of running under his legs before he actually come back, and he should be of a reasonable fitness as well. So I didn't have any doubts. I don't know about you, Lee. I actually thought Harvey Barnes met that pass that ended up at the Callum Wilson as well. I thought, geez, he's just scooped that beautifully out to him.
I thought he did. Did he not?
No, I think it took a touch. Oh, on the way through, yeah, I think it did. Well, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. I thought it was took a touch, and I'd kind of after the fourth own goal went in, I'd kind of checked out a bit. It was half twittering, half watching at the same time and things like that. But I thought it took a touch. Yeah, if it didn't, well, fantastic. My instincts were correct as well. But
I don't know. To listen to me.
Yeah, that I'll was.
If anyone doubts Wilson's fitness, you kind of doubt his ability to finish. That was a fantastic finish.
Great finish. And
if it wasn't for that back heel, that probably would have been my favourite finish of the season. Because he hits it on the half volley. He's coming across.
Yeah.
He's got to aim on the other side of the goal.
Far
he's
corner,
just
yeah.
Injury. Just come back from injury. He's been on for 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And just absolutely nails it into the far corner. No saving.
Yeah.
It was a lovely, lovely goal. And nice to see him. Yeah,
It is. And a 46th goal, a Premier League goal for Callum Wilson as well, which sees him tie the club for most Premier League goals behind Peter Beardsley. So if he scores one more goal this season, he'll be outright second, which is a fantastic result. And whatever happens to him in the summer happens, but you can't, I know he's been injured, but you can't deny the player that he's been for us. And up until probably 6 months ago, he's probably our second best striker since Alan Shearer. Probably our best striker since Alan Shearer, but unfortunately for him, there's a 6'4" Swede who's taking the piss, so he might be relegated to third pretty quick.
So how many goals has Wilson scored? Sorry,
he scored 46 in the Premier League for us since he arrived.
He's got
He's got 19 this year.
Are they all Premier League though?
I think so. Yeah. It's a Premier League Golden Boot, so he's on 19, and Haaland. Right. Haaland and Palmer are on 20, so
he's
one behind them, which is, that's another crazy stat in itself. And I hope, like, I'll regret saying this, but Haaland looks like he's sort of shit the bed a little bit. So, and Palmer only scores penalties, so it is his for the taking if he's good enough. So
he is good enough, mate.
I'll never get sick of watching him play.
If Wilson's third and nearly second or something, whatever you said, then Isak probably will just take over that next year.
Could be next year.
Yeah, she's like, yeah, no, thanks, that's mine.
Thanks a lot.
He's absolutely terrific.
We're so lucky to have him. So, final whistle. Like we've already touched on the VAR sort of pen overturn. The final whistle sees the 5-1 victory and the 13-1 aggregate over the course of the two games this season, league, which is the largest in Premier League history between two clubs, which is crazy when you consider like us and like when you've had Liverpool with their 8 goals and Man United have scored 8 goals, Man City, sometimes it's crazy to think that we hold that record now when these teams around us are a lot more financially resourceful and powerful and more depth and everything like that. But we've got it. So kudos to us. And it's also the game Cedar scored our most goals in Premier League history as well, Lee. So we've still got 4 games to go. Are we the new entertainers, do you think?
Well, some of us asking about that recently, weren't they, on the TV?
It's
been mentioned a few times now. I don't know. Not for that first half, sending the goal by Jesus Christ, it was terrible. but you know, are you entertained?
I am entertained.
I don't think we play any boring game. Our games are must-see TV. You know, there's going to be goals. not be us, but there's going to be goals.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I think Spurs is probably a little bit better in that category of, you know, there's going to be goals, but it might not be us. I don't know. It's hard to be entertained this season given how many bloody injuries that we've had. But then we've had, you know, beating PSG, which was just a memory that we'll all keep with us for a long, long time because of the whole narrative behind it and where we were and, you know, development and so on in the opposition. We've destroyed Spurs, we've destroyed Sheffield 8-0.
Yeah, it's twice.
There hasn't been a shortage of entertainment from this club, from this team, this season by any stretch. It's been, and it's not done yet, you know, I'm talking like it's finished, but it's not. Still got 4 games to go in, thinking
we can still make Europe. Which is crazy.
We can still make the lesser Europe, which is probably better for us where we are right now, particularly with, you know, the squad and the
injury. I think so, yeah. Yeah.
So, and that's a chance for us, probably a more realistic chance to win something in Europe. But it's still slightly inconsistent. Our away form has been god-awful this season. God-awful. We've won like 4 times, I think, or something. It's like, it's terrible. It has to get better next season.
It's got to get better in the next four games because we've got 4 games left and 3 of them are away. So if we do want to get into Europe, we're going to have to pick up 1 or 2 wins. We're going to have to pick up points away from home. There's no two ways about it. So we've got four games to fix our away form up. Otherwise, there's every chance we won't be in Europe next season.
And they're not going to be easy because you've got Man United who are still in the same, they're basically in the same boat as us, trying to win their way into Europe. You've got, I think, Burnley, have we?
Burnley, still fighting for their lives as well. Brentford away on the last day, which... It's the last day. Crazy shit happens on the last day. There's some always wacky and crazy results. So
yeah, exactly. So it's not going to be easy by any stretch.
No. And Brighton, we've got them at home now. They're always been a tricky opponent for us. So they do seem like they've dropped off a little bit and things like that. But like we said earlier, it's a remarkable effort to be where we are after 34 games and clear in 7th place with a huge opportunity to get into Europe. And I absolutely agree with what you said, mate. I think Europa League or even a conference league, it almost gives us a really good chance of winning a trophy. I've got no doubt. Even if we had of finished 3rd in our Champions League group, I thought at the time that we could give Europa a serious shake. There's no chance we would have been a contender. With our injury list and things like that, we couldn't be sustainable. But next year, hopefully with a full squad of available players and a midfield that might see Sandro Tonali come back and Joe Willock come back, Joel Linton come back, which is a lot different to having Elliot Anderson and Sean Longstaff in there and no disrespect. And Lewis Miley as well would be better and he'd be able to be used more in games and not have to have that fatigue and everything like that as well. And he could be a really important player for us next season too. So there is a huge chance that we can really make an impact in one of these sort of lesser European competitions next year.
What I'll also say as well is just also, you know, it might give us a more realistic chance of winning something, but it's also about getting experience in Europe.
Yeah.
You know, we had the craziness of the Champions League and everything that came with it. And
but the opponents too, like two of our group are in the semi-finals. Like, it's ridiculous.
And that's experience, obviously, but it's a very harsh lesson to have to learn.
Yeah,
when you don't really think that you're ready for it.
It's sink or swim.
A slightly easier opposition. There's never been any easy games, I don't suppose. But nonetheless, you would imagine the opposition would be slightly easier in the lesser of the European competitions. That should allow us to get a bit more experience of how to go in. Because I was saying on the chat, nobody in our setup really has that much in the way of any European experience. Like from the
Well, I said that at the end of last season, that someone with Champions League experience was a must to come in to a team. And the club went out and did that. But unfortunately, he only played a couple of games. So that didn't quite work out as how they thought it was going to work out. But yeah, you're right. And I think if we do get that European spot, we'll be much better for it than what we were this year. We'll be better prepared, not just in Europe, but we'll know how to manage, you know, the next game in 3 days in the league and back into Europe and travel and all that sort of stuff. So I think we'll be much better prepared. And like you said, the opposition won't be as fierce and as big as what they were with AC Milan, Dortmund and PSG. And like I said, two of them are in the last four. So we said it was a group of death at the time, but I think it's really shone through that it really was the group of death. And the fact that we beat one of the semi-finals 4-1 can't be underestimated.
We got friggin' screwed with that.
We should have beat them twice. Yeah.
I'm not having it. That was bullshit. That was a setup.
Yeah, the fix was in.
That
might do us, mate. Just before we wrap this up, we're less than a month now, Lee, that the famous black and white are coming to our fabulous city as well, the sporting capital of the world, and I won't hear you or Lee. Oh, you are Lee. You are Lee. You or Jack or anyone else give me otherwise. It is the sporting capital. Less than a month to go. I think tickets are still on sale. If you are coming or you do live in Victoria, please jump on the Aussie Mags Facebook page and Instagram page. They have all the details for all the pre-game meetups for the Tottenham game at the MCG and the A-League All-Stars game at Marvel Stadium on the Friday night. They have the locations, the times, everything like that. If you want to come for a beer, trust me, I've been to a couple of meetups here in Melbourne and went there not really knowing anyone, and it's amazing how quickly you gel and talk to people and you make friends like that, because you're all there and you've all got a common reason to talk and things like that. So it's absolutely fantastic, and you'll make hundreds of new friends when you get there. And if you haven't got a ticket, get to the game as well. But jump on Aussie Mags. They'll have all your pre-game stuff sorted, and hopefully we can get some more information from the club in the next few weeks regarding if there's going to be an open training session or anything for the fans over the course of the week in Melbourne as well. So definitely keep your eyes peeled for that. And if there is anything, Aussie Mags will be all over that as well. So jump on there for your updates. Lee, thank you for jumping on tonight, mate. It's been a pleasure as always. We'll be back probably at the end of the week sometime for our Burnley preview. And then I think, stay tuned, we've got a huge guest lined up for our next United series episode as well. So keep your eyes and your ears peeled for that. Hopefully that'll land sometime next week. So that might do us for tonight, Lee. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Keith, mate. Thank you.
Thanks everyone for watching and listening, and we'll catch you soon.